Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, ricksmithshow.com. So some good signs here in Pennsylvania. As I've been saying, look, I think as Pennsylvania goes, the rest of the country will go as well. If you can see the leveling of our congressional delegation, and it's looking like Chrissy Houlihan is going to, actually she's been declared the victor in that race. So I'm pretty happy about that. I have no doubt that Madeline Dean is going to take her seat out in the 4th congressional district. But Chrissy Houlihan flipped the 6th, and I'm pretty happy about that. That's a good sign. Still looking for the PA 10th, and some of the it's still kind of up in the air. So I'm fingers crossed, still early in the evening. Anyway, here to talk about the results, the races that he's following, our good friend Ben Jackson, dad of the decade, contributor over at No Pats. I always forget that. He's going to tell me. Ben, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, I'm glad to be here. That's a Patreon partisan.
There you go.
You're looking for there, yeah.
I was going to get it. It wasn't in front of me, and sometimes I'm
no screwed. Worries.
So I'm looking at I'm hoping big night. Kind of sad to see some of the Senate races go the way they've gone. Looks like Heitkamp's going to go down. Looks like Donnelly went down. But in the House, still some optimism and some good outcomes so far.
Yeah, I think I've been talking to a lot of my progressive friends and colleagues as the night's unfolded. And it's felt a little demoralizing to a lot of us for a couple of reasons. One is that the races that we really love and care about, at least on many of the races we love and care about, are in Florida and Georgia. And those are looking a little tough for us right now. But when you look at the big picture, I think at the end of the day, the numbers are going to look about like where they looked a few weeks ago, that we're losing the Senate races we thought we were going to lose. And we're winning the House races we thought we were going to win. But what I'm really impressed with is looking at what's happening in some of the state races. We're going to have our first openly gay governor in Colorado. Chris Kobach went down in Kansas. And Kansas is really looking good for us. We'll have our first Native American woman elected to Congress. In the upper Midwest, we'll have in Minnesota and Michigan, we'll have our first Muslim women elected to Congress. It looks pretty good for a full female executive in Michigan. I think there are a lot of really encouraging things that we're seeing out of this that don't match the feeling. Part of it is because, we have these early races that we really cared about, Andrew Gillum and Bill Nelson looking pretty tough for us in Florida, and not quite sure where it's going to land with Stacey Abrams in Georgia just yet, although I am hopeful we'll still get to the runoff there. That feeling is a little bit deflating, but looking at the big picture, it looks great.
Well, in talking about Georgia, when you throw 591,000 people off the voting rolls and you can't find cords to plug in the voting machines in predominantly African-American districts, no wonder you're doing well.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I'm real curious to see where that will go if we get into the runoff, because there are really serious systemic obstacles to voting there, and there were really serious problems with this election. The way it played out there. And I don't think we're going to know where that lands tonight. I suspect that that's an election that's heading to court just on the way that voters were disenfranchised there. And the fact that the person who's responsible for fixing those problems is the person who's benefiting from those problems. And I'm just seeing right now that it looks like they're calling Texas for Ted Cruz as well, which is sad, but expected. So that was going our way. But as far as we get to Georgia, the GOP just throws up roadblock after roadblock after roadblock to voting rights. And we saw a really interesting thing happen in Florida today with the felon re-enfranchisement, restoration of voting rights ballot initiative passed, meaning that about 1 million felons will get back on the voting rolls for the people who had lost their voting rights will have those voting rights potentially reinstated by the next election in Florida. And that could permanently change what that electorate looks like there. So there are some really good things happening still.
Yeah, at the end of the day, regardless of what we see coming out of tonight, the organizing cannot stop.
No.
And look, there are some victories, and I'm still quite confident the Democrats are going to take the House.
Absolutely.
still going to be able, and this is all I really wanted, was to be able to have that check on this administration and hold them accountable. And then you continue to build for 2020. That was always the plan. And I don't want to get people caught up in this, well, we lost this, you know, this race that we invested so much time and energy in. You know, that's going to happen. It's the big picture that I'm considering down the road.
Yeah, and that picture looks really good. And I think what's really encouraging about, even if I think when we dig into some of the math in these races, Democrats are becoming competitive in places that they have not been competitive. So even in these races that we lose, these are races that we should have been clobbered in a lot of ways. And they're races that we're losing by a point or 2 points or 3 points. And that both means that we have built an infrastructure there. We have brought in candidates to some degree that appeal to an electorate there. And we have a roadmap to build off of. I would say the one thing that I think is really important that we take away from this is that the candidates that you see outperforming expectations are candidates who did not run to the center. We have candidates who ran on progressive values. So we're seeing candidates that like Beto, like Stacey Abrams, like Andrew Gillum, that are right in their neck and neck in these sort of red areas, are not Republicans wearing blue MAGA hats, right? You know, you look at Tennessee and you see Bredesen lost there, and he lost there because he was largely a Republican and he ran that way.
Yep.
And if we start running Democrats who are actually Democrats, I think we're going to start seeing a lot more of these wins that really since the DLC in the 90s, we've forgotten how to run progressives in the South and in these more conservative districts. And we found a way to do that. And I think we can build on that and see real gains that have lasting impacts over the next decade.
It wasn't Harry Truman who said, he was quoted with saying, if you give the voters the choice between a Republican and a Democrat who acts like a Republican, they're going to choose the real thing every time.
Absolutely. And that's what we've become in a large way. And I think that we're seeing now that was a mistake and that we don't need to do that. And that's really encouraging. You know, I hope that our party leadership sees that, takes that in, and we start recruiting and running candidates that fit that roadmap. And I think we will. And, you know, even if Andrew Gillum does not come out on top tonight, he's not going anywhere. That's a man who will be a senator, who will be governor. You know, he is really talented there. Stacey Abrams, like I said, I think she's still going to go to the runoff, but she's going to be in that. And we're going to have that bench across the country. You know, we have run a record number of candidates. Many of them are first-time candidates who have done amazing things, and they're just going to get better out of what comes out of tonight. So this is really great stuff.
No, and look, what's happening, and I think you've hit on this, is the fact that you're building the infrastructure that Democrats never really had. I mean, I look at where I live, which has been a very red area, you know, since I've lived here, and there really hasn't been, you know, the kind of infrastructure that a candidate needs of volunteers and donors and, you know, the machine that goes into running campaigns until recently when they became somewhat competitive. And now you're seeing that kind of enthusiasm, that kind of infrastructure, you know, propping up so that, you know, let's say George Scott doesn't take out Scott Perry this election. Next time around, if he runs again or whoever runs, there's going to be something hopefully left behind to where you're steps further ahead than you were before when you didn't really fight in the past. I mean, I see, you know, these battles, these fights, as you pointed out, not running to the center, not being Republican light. I see these as huge steps forward towards the future. You took your licks today, but hey, you fought, and that's the important part.
Yeah, and you know what? We gave some licks too, you know, and I think that's what we've been afraid to do. You know, we as a party have been afraid of being progressive. You know, that we allowed the term liberal to become a dirty word in politics, and we've been afraid to throw our punches. And this time around, and this may be because of Donald Trump, we were able to run some candidates that 30 or 40 years ago would not have been considered all that liberal, and now we're considered that sort of the far left of the party. And those are the people who are winning or who are coming close to winning in places they have no business doing it. And you're right, they're Many of these people will run again, and those who don't run again have left a staircase, an escalator for the next person to get on, so that we're not starting from zero in these places that everyone counted us out. I look at what tonight looks like, and I think of what the electoral map's going to look like in 2020, and Donald Trump is in for a much harder run from day one than he ever got in 2016, because we are turning places blue that did not have any blue in them at all, and that's really great for us.
That is good stuff. And, you know, the news here out of Pennsylvania, as I've been saying, is, you know, Ben...
Sure.
Been, you know, kind of the ground zero, and as I'm hoping, you know, Pennsylvania goes, the state goes, it's looking right now that, going from a 13-5 Republican lead in the congressional delegation to, with the court here in the state ungerrymandering the state, to right now it's looking like 9-9 and possibly Democrats taking the lead 10-9.
Right,
where you've got, you know, you've got three women, you know, who flipped those seats that, that had been Republican for a while. I mean, you had Chrissy Houlihan in the sixth take that seat, Mary Scanlon take that seat in the fifth. I'm certain Madeline Dean's going to take the seat in the fourth. You've also seen the seventh district, you know, what was Charlie Dent's area.
Right.
Susan Wilde has flipped that seat. So here in Pennsylvania, at least, the year of the woman.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things that I actually really love about the slate of candidates that we've run. You know, even if looking back over, you know, the last, say, 30 years, we thought of 1992 as the year of the woman, and we added two women to the Senate. And no matter what happens this year, we are going to make significant gains with women in the House, in the Senate. The number of women candidates who ran for us and ran on progressive platforms is going to continue to allow us to have a bench of women who can come in and change the face of government and to appeal to voters that, frankly, we have been bad at reaching out to. We've been running men trying to speak to women's issues, and we are not inspiring voters. And this year we did something different, and that's really going to change the face of the party and change the face of elections for the foreseeable future. The sad thing, though, is that even if every woman who ran for Congress won, we would end up with about a 25% female Congress. And so we have to do better still. But the progress that we've made there is just huge. And that's across the country. You know, I think we're going to see some good things out of California in that regard, too. I think we'll see, Katie Hill win in California 25. I'm really looking forward to seeing what Kristen Sinema does in the Southwest. And so, you know, we're still going to continue to see those games tonight, I think.
Yeah, well, that's the hope.
It
would have been nice to pick up a couple of Senate seats. But that didn't happen.
No, and, you know, the math was so hard on that. I think that if we had just held where we were, that would have been a huge win, and losing a seat or two. As long as we keep above that 60, we keep them below the 60-vote threshold, you know, it's not a huge difference in the Senate with Mitch McConnell if we're at 49 votes or if we're at 42 votes, right? It's effectively the same thing, although it would have been nice to have. I don't think it's functionally a lot different one way or the other.
Yeah. Anything surprise you tonight?
So no big surprises other than I really thought Gillum was going to win, and I thought Beto was going to be farther out of it. I really thought Gillum was going to pull that off with 2 or 3 points, and the fact that he didn't surprises me, although I should not be surprised out of anything out of Florida. And I thought we were going to see Beto lose bigger and earlier, but that turnout number in Texas, which was projected at 6 million, it came in at about 8 million, was just a huge unexpected boon. And those are voters we're going to be able to continue to build on. So
do you think,
even that loss is good news.
Do you think so? I mean, all of the talk that the younger voters maybe turned out. And, you know, my fear is that, you know, you look back to 2008, you had the young wave of voters coming in, and, you know, probably didn't vote again for a couple of cycles. Do you fear any lag from that?
Well, you know, my bigger fear is that we don't learn the lessons of 2008 and that we continue to, if we don't find the Beddoes out there, right? If we don't find the candidates that are going to inspire those voters, then we're going to lose them, and we deserve to. You know, if we continue to run sort of the same milquetoast, Republican light, then those people are not going to come out for us. But I think that we've seen this happen pretty clearly in so many places, like I was saying earlier, that we didn't deserve to be competitive and weren't expected to be competitive, that we'd be really stupid at a leadership level to not take those lessons and not run these candidates. And that will bring those voters in. I also think that Donald Trump is going to drive those voters to us. And, you know, him being on the ballot against us, while it's terrible for our country, him being in office, it's going to inspire those voters to work against him even harder.
Yeah, and look, at the end of it, you know, that's what we're going to need. Take a couple of days off, rest up, rejuvenate, re-energize, and back at it for 2020, because at the end of the day, that's when we really need to be taking things back.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, this is just the first round of what's going to be, you know, a fight up to 2020, and it's not going to stop there. You know, this is not a one election fix. We hope that we fix Donald Trump in the next election, but there are still going to be a lot of work to do. So we take a break for a couple of days and we're back in it to 2020 and 2022. You know, we're going to start seeing the census results come in and new congressional districts, and you know, that fight is going to be ongoing. So, you know, it's not much of a downtime here, that's for sure.
No, and the fight is over the census. I mean, because at the end of the day, you look at the gerrymandering all across the country, and not just, you know, the congressional districts. I mean, Pennsylvania has some of the most bizarre looking districts for the state House and state Senate. And, you know, I often tweet out the one of the senatorial district that I live in the 30th here in Pennsylvania Senate district. And it looks like that Calvin kid that is usually leaking on stuff with bad case of gas. And I'm going, I have no idea how you dreamt that district up. But there it is. It's a cartoon character.
Yeah. And you know, this round of elections for governors and the next round of election for governors are going to be so critical in making sure that everybody has access to the polls and fair representation in government. And so, you know, there's just no downtime. This is we'll take our wins and our losses tonight and see where we end up, and then use that to move forward right away. You know, there's no time to lose on this. And it's just so fundamental to who we are as a nation that everybody has this right to representative government. And the fact that we have especially one party working so hard to deny that right for the sole purpose of retaining power is so blatantly un-American that we just cannot let up on the gas. You know, we've just got to keep driving through this until we fix it.
And that's it right there. Ben Jackson, I appreciate the time. I look forward to talking to you again, and I'm sure we will be hashing this through for some time now.
Anytime, Rick. Very glad to talk to you.
Good stuff, Ben. Thanks so much. Appreciate the time. And look, I mean, and I think Ben's spot on that, you know, the goal was, you know, hey, we take back the House. Add some accountability. Add some sanity. And keep building, keep building, keep leaving infrastructure, keep building towards 2020, 2022, and beyond. And don't let the pundits and the naysayers, don't let them take you down. The building and the organizing has to continue. And I'm just tweeting out the image of the 30th senatorial district here in Pennsylvania. Take a look at our Twitter account to see just how bizarre it is, and share some of your thoughts. Quick break. Right back. 7, 8, 9.